there, it's Frank Buckley. Today our guest is someone you'll recognize from TV and the movies and the comedy stage. My guest is Tommy Davidson. He became famous in the 90s as a regular on the groundbreaking sketch comedy show In Living Color.
I made a million by the time I was 10. I wrote a love song to a rat named Ben. And then I got a nose job and changed my chin and made my skin light. Look me in the face and tell me if you think I'm black or white.
Tommy Davidson is a master of impressions, and on In Living Color, he was in his element, jumping from impressions like that one to original characters on a show that America had never really seen before. A sketch comedy show with a truly multicultural cast. A show created by an African-American, Kenan Ivory Wayans. And while Tommy Davidson was doing impressions on the show of iconic black entertainers like Sammy Davis Jr., MC Hammer, and Michael Jackson, his own background was black and white. Tommy Davidson was raised in a white family. He writes about it in a new book, Living in Color, What's Funny About Me? When did Tommy realize he was different from his white siblings and parents? And how does his background inform his comedy? You're about to find out. Here's my conversation with Tommy Davidson. It is great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations having me. On this amazing book.
Ah, thank you. I'm very happy about that book.
Yeah, you very. Went deep with this, and you revealed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think many of your fans know this. Others may not know this incredible story of how you ended up with being adopted by a white mm-hmm, family, mm-hmm. And your mother literally found you in a trash can.
To be literal, it was actually a pile of trash on the side of a house. And the way it happened was really miraculous. She was walking out of the house and she said, something told me to look under this tire. She said, I pushed up the tire and I saw your foot.
Mm.
And then I moved the trash out of the way and there you were. You know, so it was a fiber.
Yeah.
A fiber of my being.
And she had gone to Mississippi mm-hmm. because she was inspired by a speech by John Kennedy. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yes. Her and her husband at the time were teachers at Colorado State. And Kennedy made a plea to all of white America, if you look back on this time in history, will you be able to say that you did something about the race problem? So it's kind of a call to white America to be a part of this race solution,
mm-hmm.
you know? And they decided to go to Mississippi to do voting drives and to immunize children. So they went there for a couple of months and did that. In the meantime, they met my real mom,
mm-hmm.
who gave birth to me. So they ended up going back down there to do some more work. And she was gone. And they had become friends, you know. And so they said she left. She left. We think she left her older kid at another house. So my mom's nosy. So she went to check on that. She had some kind of instinct or something. And she went into the house, and it was a dilapidated house. It was like kids in there doing drugs. And it was just, you know, vacant and raggedy. So she ran out of there fast. But when she was leaving out of the house, there's a pile of trash on the side of the house. And she said, something made her look under this tire. She just, and she saw my foot there. So, you know, of course I was recovered from there. They don't know how long I was there. I was 18 months old at the time. I was in a coma, starved, contusions in my skull. Didn't know I was gonna live. Took me to the hospital and got nursed back to health and moved to Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yeah, and then, you were raised in this family, but even before, mm-hmm. was it before or after Colorado that you were briefly in Washington with your
It was
family?
After. It was after. So, I'm actually a little white boy from the Midwest. You know what I mean? As far as I know.
Right.
You know, I didn't see it that way, you know? But as you go further in the book, you see how I see it that way.
Right.
But we moved from there, you know, I moved from mountains and streams and, you know, farms and animals and horses and just, you know, right to Washington, D.C. In 1968 during the, like, the riots when King got shot. Mm. So when we got there, there's fires and tanks and all this stuff going on. We're laying on the ground in the car, and my sister looks like Cindy Brady, and my brother looks like David Cassidy from the Partridge Family. Mm-hmm. You know how much we love the Partridge Family, man. You know, and the Brady Bunch. All Here's right. a story. You know what I'm saying? And so we got there, and we went to play with the other kids after we had been there for a minute, and the black kids kicked our ass every day. I mean, it was like we couldn't even hardly come out of the house. Mm. You know, and they kept saying, white cracker, and they would call me a white cracker lover. So I went to my mom, and I was like, you know, why are they calling me a white cracker lover? I like graham crackers.
Yeah.
You know?
You're six or something, right?
Five, yeah.
Five.
You know? And it's the truth. You know, white crackers are kind of dry. You got to have water with them. Graham crackers, well, you eat those, they go right down, you know? Especially got a little cinnamon sugar on them. You know, she said, that's what people your color call people our color when they don't like them. Mm. And I said, well, what color am I? And she said, well, you're black. And I said, no, I'm not black. I'm brown, because I learned my colors from the crayons. And you guys are like peach. You know, sometimes there'll be a box of crayons that said flesh. Kind of freaky.
Right.
But yeah.
But you're
I thought that was weird.
Yeah, I mean,
you're... It was crazy. I was like trying to put it all together, because I thought whatever we were, you know, we're not a horse, we're not a cat, we're not a dog or whatever, but whatever we are, I'm a brown one of what we are. Mm. Okay? Because I saw a cult could be black and it would a horse that would be black would have a cult that's like gray, you know, or cats would have a litter. Mm-hmm. The cat can be a brown cat and have a white one, a black one, a gray one, a brown one. So I thought I was a brown one of what we were.
Yeah.
You know? And I wasn't, you know? And we call each other different colors other than the color that we really are, so it was confusing.
Yeah.
And so we moved to Wheaton, Maryland, because it had got so bad in D.C. And this is the first time I heard the N-word, because grown men were chasing me home. Mm. Like, it was terrifying, man. You know, I'd look up and, get the nigga, kill him, you know? It was like, you know, I stopped going outside. It was like people throwing stuff through the house and, you know, so I went to my mother. I was like, who are these N's? Because we got to stay away from them. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, they must be pretty bad. And she told me, that's what people our color call people your color when they don't like them. Now I'm really feeling like, you know, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And I thought it was stupid. To this day, you know, I know it's stupid. I thought it was then.
Yeah.
You know, so we eventually moved to an integrated neighborhood. And that's when I started, okay, I'm black, because this group of teenagers started calling me the N-word and were chasing me. And then these black teenagers came out and the white teenagers ran that way. So I've been black ever since that day in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but the beautiful thing is I got to go home to my mom and my family who love me, that I never considered to be any color other than love.
Right.
Yeah.
And to this day, having grown up mm-hmm. in the context of both,
mm-hmm.
right? Obviously, mm-hmm. you're physically black.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Grew up in the white family.
Uh-huh.
Do people continue to ask you, you know, what are you? How do you identify? That sort of thing?
Not in these days and time. You know, I see how society questions it.
Well, do you question yourself? Do you, mm-hmm. was there a period where you went?
Yeah. Yeah, because how are you going to figure that out?
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a lot of searching, like, what is black and all this stuff, you know? Like, in first grade, I got in first grade, and they did the Pledge of Allegiance, you know? And I put up the Black Power fist in the Pledge of Allegiance, you know? And I got sent to the principal's office. I got in trouble for that.
Mm.
My mother came down to the school, which I learned she likes doing that, you know? And the principal says, you know, he raised the Black Power fist and, you know, that's not funny and we don't think that's not a joke around here. That's the Pledge of Allegiance. And she said, and she looked at, I mean, she used to scare me. She looked that principal in the face. She said, that's all he knows. He knows a song called Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud by James Brown, and I taught it to him. And that's who he is. And I was like, damn. You know what I mean? But she said, but he'll learn the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's what he has to do to be here.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want you to punish him for that.
Right.
He's in the first grade.
Right.
He's like six.
Right.
You know? So that's the kind of stuff that started really, you know, developing right. me into who I was. And, you know, I remember a friend of mine, Brian, who's white. He, I see life from the both sides now. I'm kind of old. So Brian did a speech. It was a speech contest in school for Martin Luther King. And whoever won got whatever, you know. And Brian's was the best. Brian was killing. This is like in sixth grade, killing it. I mean, he had it down. And he lost to a little black girl who couldn't even hardly do it. You know what I mean? And it was like, and I didn't get that then, but, you know, does the black girl win the contest or the white guy win the contest? You know, and that's when I started saying to myself, it's a weird thing, you know, but Brian isn't weird. Brian did that from his heart. Mm-hmm. Brian did it good. Brian believed in what it was about. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters.
Right.
That's all that matters.
We're going to continue the conversation with Tommy Davidson when we come back.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Girl, how do I look?
I told you, Wanda, you look fine.
Oh, you don't think this dress is too tight, do you?
No, girl, you look perfect.
Okay, then.
Come on, there they are. Put the compact away.
I hope he ain't ugly, because I can't stand no ugly man.
No.
Damn! Wait.
It's so funny, even now. I mean,
from
In Living Color.
Yeah, man.
That was, I mean, when you guys were doing
that.
Did it, you had to know that it was special.
Yeah.
That it was huge.
And you knew what it was going to do.
I mean, the people who were on that show, I mean, all the way mm-hmm. in siblings, first of all, Jim Carrey,
mm-hmm.
David Alan Grier,
go.
Jennifer Lopez,
go.
Jamie Foxx, who we just mm-hmm. saw, mm-hmm. Carrie Ann Inaba, and then it goes mm-hmm. on and on and on.
And the writers. The writers went on to produce Friends, Martin. We just changed TV.
But no one was doing that. I mean, now we mm-hmm. say, okay, mm-hmm. a sketch comedy show around black themes, around mm-hmm. black mm-hmm. stars, mm-hmm. run by an African-American
yes.
man.
Yes.
Okay. It doesn't seem unusual to us mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. in the way that in the 90s, mm-hmm. 1990, mm-hmm. it was groundbreaking.
It was groundbreaking, but that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book and called it A Living in Color.
Yeah.
You know, because it was groundbreaking in that sense, but what was groundbreaking about it to me is that it was a show where blacks were actually able to do a show that whites laugh at, too.
Yeah.
See, because we all love the same things. We all love Andy Griffith. We all love the Flintstones. We all love Lucy. You know, we all love Lucy. You know, don't talk about Scooby-Doo. You gotta have him. You know what I mean? We all love George Jefferson.
Right.
We all love all of those things. We're Americans. We laugh at the same stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a chance for us to even become closer because the laughs weren't separate in this. Mm. Now, but they were presented.
Yeah.
By a majority African-American cast.
Right.
But the subject matter is comedy.
Right, right.
So it was groundbreaking in that sense, like hip-hop.
Right.
You know?
And I say, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn when I say, well, it's not unusual now to see an African-American mm-hmm. running a show or, you know, black starring in a show.
Yeah.
I don't think we've come far enough mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. with people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Everybody's got a long way to go, you know. When I was eight, because I used to read a lot when I was a kid, you know, and I remember hearing and reading, because that made me so mad and so hurt about black and white, I started mm-hmm. studying why things are like that mm-hmm. from a very young age.
Yeah.
Like, my mother would give me novels at seven, because I started reading really prolific at an early age, and she'd give them to me and say, like, I know you can read it, and I'd read it. Autobiography of Lena Horne, I Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee about the Native Americans, you know, Malcolm X. She gave me the autobiography of Malcolm X, but before she gave it to me, she said, I want you to know the white people aren't the devil.
Right.
You know, and I was like, I know that, Mom. Come on,
right.
man. You know? But when I read it, I saw her point, you know?
Yeah.
So I never really saw things, so I studied things really, really close.
But do you
so
think
I see,
things
yeah.
have come far enough? Or is it...
Mm-hmm.
In Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
have things changed from when you were on?
They've changed a lot in that there's they've changed and they haven't in ways, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a balance of, you know, hindsight 2020 and where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that proved commercially that we could work in writing and directing and do all those things and have shows that are run by us now. You see it evening up,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, Friends never had a black friend. You know what I mean? And Seinfeld is in syndication, and a black friend ain't crawled into the window yet. You know what I mean? And it's in New York City.
Right.
So I'm saying, you know, the point is, when I started reading and really studying how we are,
mm-hmm.
I realized that human race was a term that I really like. Because somebody got to be at the finish line.
Yeah.
And we're like clamoring. You know, the Chinese are clamoring, and, you know, the blacks are clamoring, and, you know, Jews are clamoring. It sounds like a race, you know? But I like the term mankind, because it was like man being kind.
Yeah.
You know? So even though we're in this human race, and racism is an ism, and not a wasm, it's something that is, like sexism and all that, and affects all of us, you know, we're still man being kind,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
And so it's a balance to me when I see it, you know? It's good to see the progress of blacks in TV and entertainment, but it's good to me, my perception is, it's good to see the progress of everybody in everything.
Yeah.
You know?
One thing I learned in this book is one of the reasons you stepped away from the show, And it has to do with substance
mm-hmm,
abuse.
Mm-hmm,
I want to talk to you about that
mm-hmm.
After this short break.
Okay.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You eat cornbread, you turn black. You know that would be a trip if that happened at a party. White guy be eating cornbread. You know, so I tell the guy, I'm saying, look, either you invest or you step off, one or the other. You know, this guy's talking trash.
So I'm chilling, right? The more cornbread you eat, the blacker you get. You know. So. Who's gonna tell me, right? That he ain't about investing. You see what I'm saying? I'm saying respect me. Give me another piece of that cornbread. Oh,
back with Tommy Davidson. You know what I love is that you see yourself from a routine from the 90s, and it still makes you laugh.
Hey, man. Hey, man. This was all an accident, you know, but on purpose. My friend Howard, I told him I got a new job as an assistant chef at a Ramada, and he said, you're the stupidest person I ever met. You know, you need to do comedy. So he presses me and presses me, and he made me go on stage at the worst strip club ever in the worst part of Washington, D.C. And I go on stage, and I'm like, what do you want me to do? He's like, I don't care what you do, man. Just say something. And I went up there, and they laughed. And so since that day, it's like fast forward to now.
Is that it? Did you go up with a set? Did you have?
No, he just thought it was funny. So I just went up and just started talking. I talked about real things that happened.
Do you remember the first joke?
It was kind of not a joke, but it was like me trying to. We had a lot of roaches, you know, growing up, a lot of roaches. So one weekend, my mother said, if you clean the kitchen good enough, we won't have no roaches. So I'm like, okay, all right. So, but she took Saturday away from us. That was big. And we had to clean up the kitchen on Saturday and Sunday, kids. And so she was right. We didn't have any more roaches in the kitchen, but we found out that they moved to our couch.
Okay.
And it's true, because we're watching the cartoons.
So you told that story.
We're watching cartoons, me and my sister watching Speed Racer or something, and we lifted up the pillow on the couch, and there's like thousands of roaches.
Oh.
Anyway.
I mentioned before the break that I wanted to talk to you about something you had struggled with at one point. And and you and I talked about this off camera. You're a big star. You achieved everything. Movies, TV show, big hit, filling arenas as a comedian. And you have a substance abuse problem? I mean, we look at it from the outside and say, how could that be?
Yeah. And I felt that way at first, too. You know, oh, my God, like, you know, why me? Or like,
from a loving,
you know,
family,
yeah, like, what the heck, you know, like, you know, I didn't wake up that morning and say, let me just destroy everything that I've ever done. You know, but sitting here, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because what it was a threshold for me. It was a threshold, because all of those things, all of that trauma, that's trauma, man, being left in a trash can. That's trauma. We all have our individual. Yeah. How does a person end up under a bridge, living under a bridge? You know, or how does somebody as wonderful as Elvis Presley end up dying, or Marilyn Monroe, or Jimi Hendrix end up dying over something like that? You know, and how do you understand that stuff?
Right.
And how do you come to know, you know, that how do you survive that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I couldn't tell you exactly how, but I can tell you if that didn't happen and I didn't have the recovery process and I didn't have the insights that I have now, one, there would be no book, you know? And two, there would be no me, you know? And so in that book is all the things that, that's why, you know, Living in Color is owed to my mom, you know? Because I wasn't going to write a book. My sister said, you never talk about mom. And I never talked about my mother because of something that was in my head from way back. I like to hide my mother because there was always a crazy reaction. The black people wouldn't like me anymore because she was white. Or if my brother and my sister took me somewhere with them, and my mother took me with them, all white people, they wouldn't like them because I was black.
So is that what you feared, or that actually happened?
No, it actually happened. So it was something that didn't have to be there, you know? But how do you go back and start to unravel all the things that are in your hard drive? You know what I mean? You know? So I had to go and get all this stuff out of my hard drive. You know what I mean?
And so the substance abuse was to dull that, to avoid it?
You know what? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I know that it happened.
Yeah.
You know? And the reason, I couldn't even tell you. You know? But it's my defining moment. It's my defining moment. I didn't have to, you know, River Phoenix or Robin Williams, who didn't even have a substance abuse problem. You know? And he's one of our greatest comedians.
Yeah.
And me and Jim Carrey and all of us, we're really good friends with him. And, you know, took his own life.
Is that what
so
made you stop? Or that made you not have a substance abuse problem, or however you describe it?
I tell you, it just, I got lucky because it came to the point where it was either one or the other was going to happen. And I just got fortunate that I ran into some good people that I was surrounded by that knew a way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, this has been a great conversation. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue the conversation on the audio podcast. So,
just that one more question.
Here's our
Wong.
This is the theme music to the bonus question Wong. For our audio podcast.
We all love that song.
Tommy, thanks for staying with us on the audio podcast for at least one more question here, and that is, you, with your talents, the impressions, the comedic timing, all that stuff, you could have done Saturday Night Live. You talked to Saturday Night Live. Was it a week before you got the job within Living Color?
No. That was a situation that didn't work out for me, and I was so disappointed.
But you did interview with
them. Yeah, I did interview.
You talked to
I talked to Lorne Michaels. It didn't work out. So I was like, man, what am I going to do now? See, because you never know. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
That's where this book is. This book is for everybody. Because right when you think things are over is when things start. I never knew that I was going to have a chance to get on In Living Color. After that, because that's the greatest, like, that show is like, that's the show to be on.
Right. You wanted If you're a sketch artist,
right.
SNL is where you belong.
Exactly.
And so you get there, you meet with the guy.
It doesn't work out. And I'm thinking it's over. And then In Living Color happens. And it's all because I kept doing the craft. Mm. It doesn't matter what works out for you or what doesn't work out for you.
Yeah.
It's you working out for you. It's you doing what you do best. And eventually, opportunity meets preparation. Some people call it luck.
Yeah.
Some people call it fate.
Yeah.
You can call it whatever you want.
Right.
You know? But if a piece of grass wants to come through a sidewalk, you can't stop it. It will.
Yeah. Well, Tommy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Tommy. We just scratched the surface of his life story. You can read that in his new book, Living in Color, What's Funny About Me. We'll have a link to that on our podcast page at ktla.com/Frank Buckley Interviews. And join us on KTLA for the TV version of today's conversation. We're on Saturdays and Sundays on KTLA. Check your listings for the times. As always, I appreciate your feedback on social media and your 5-star reviews and comments on iTunes. If you'd like to share a thought, I'm Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram, and you can also post on the Frank Buckley Facebook page. I read all of your comments. Thanks for joining us this week, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.